Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdett, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, February 25th. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about healthcare staffing, particularly at hospitals and health systems. Specifically, we're going to talk about the latest annual survey by the American College of Healthcare Executives on what's keeping hospital CEOs up at night. Here's a clue, staffing. And the American Hospital Association's new strategic plan and what it focuses on. Here's another clue, staffing. To tell us what these clues mean for the industry moving forward are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Well, last week we discussed which TV shows we'd all be streaming. And Dave, you predicted that you'd be watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel with your wife. Just want you to know I was right there with you. And I enjoyed the show. So, Dave, I'm feeling very much in solidarity with you today.
Right on. It's a great show. Great show. Julie, how are you doing?
Well, I just spent 3 days in Spokane, Washington for a volleyball tournament where I think one out of every 250 people maybe was wearing a mask. And all I can say is that it felt weird.
That's interesting. I guess it's over in Spokane.
It's not over in Washington State, but Spokane feels differently.
Thank you. Now, before we talk about healthcare staffing, I wanted to get your take on this phrase, what keeps you up at night? I know I used it in the intro, but I really don't like it. To me, it's shorthand for people who don't really know what to ask because they don't know what to ask. It hides a lot of ignorance. Dave, does it bother you as much as it bothers me? And what catchphrase grinds your gears?
Well, that particular question doesn't bother me too much because it's an open-ended way of asking an interviewee to identify their biggest concerns. But I do agree with you that it's overused and can reflect a lack of interviewer preparation. What grinds my gears? That's a great turn of phrase, Dave. Are business speak terms for ordinary events, deck for slide presentation, coordinates for contact information, space for industry segment, hack for shortcut, presser for press conference. I mean, the list goes on. I generally like more precision in my language, but unfortunately, I'm guilty of using many of these same terms myself. So don't do as I say.
I'll have to make sure these scripts we write exclude those. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? Does the phrase, what keeps you up at night, keep you up at night? And if not, what buzzword or catchphrase does?
I actually love the phrase, what keeps you up at night, because everybody has an answer. And I am equally guilty of using just ridiculous words sometimes, many times maybe. But my word of choice at the moment is platform. And that's because everyone and their mother is using platform when they actually really have point solutions. And my friend Seth Joseph, who used to be at SureScripts, great guy, has done a lot of good work on platforms and marketplaces. And, you know, we need to educate some people out there.
Yeah, Dave, that's one of your favorite words, but we know you use it correctly. So maybe we could do a show on that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I need to talk to Seth and get schooled.
I could go on a long rant about a single source of truth, but I'll save that for another show. Let's look at the truth in this new ACHE survey. The college asked hospital CEOs to rank 11 issues in order of how pressing they are. For the first time since 2004, financial challenges finished second. This year, the number one challenge was personnel shortages. Of specific concern were shortages of registered nurses and of technicians like med techs and lab techs. The number one specific financial challenge was increasing costs for staff and supplies. Dave, are the results a surprise to you? Do you think staffing will hold the number one spot for years to come? And what market innovations are needed to help hospitals and health systems deal with these ongoing staff shortages and increases in labor costs?
Well, those are big questions. I better get moving if I'm going to address them all in 2 minutes. Given the attention staffing shortages have received, I'm not surprised it's become the top CEO concern. Some hospitals are managing with nurse staffing levels down 25% or more. I am surprised that financial challenges had a 17-year run as the top concern. If that were the case, you'd think that CEOs would have done more to make their hospitals cost competitive. But alas, that's a topic for another day. But CEOs and hospital executives in general tend to be reactive rather than proactive. And paying for temp workers to cover staffing shortages as well as higher wages to retain their current employees has created a significant financial challenge for them. Higher labor costs were the primary reason cited this week by Ascension to explain its drop in operating margin for the first 6 months of this fiscal year to 0.2%, down from 5.7% last year, so pretty cataclysmic drop. Personnel shortages will continue to plague hospitals, but I imagine, given everything else that's going on, financial challenges will reclaim its top position in the ACHE poll in 2022. On the solutions front, we've already seen the emergence of numerous digital staffing companies that match vacancies with available personnel. Like almost every other health tech application, these companies are getting funded. They include Trusted, Health Carousel, Staff DNA, and Notable. These platforms, sorry about that, Julie, will continue to grow by reducing placement friction. Longer term, it feels like the broker function that drives temporary staffing should disappear. Great software eats the middle. It's not hard to envision digital registries with ratings that enable placements without brokers. I also think hospitals by necessity are becoming better at addressing real employee concerns with solutions that reduce workplace burden. Most caregivers aren't mercenaries. They're not looking for the highest dollar necessarily. They're called to serve others. Hospitals can retain higher percentages of their medical professionals, not only by paying them more, but also by enabling more flexible staffing models, by allowing medical professionals to practice at the top of their license, by providing more recognition for the services they provide. By the way, those Super Bowl ads were a nice touch by a couple of organizations. And by incorporating digital tools that enable caregivers and patients to connect more effectively to really enhance that human bond. Better tools and better management are the keys for developing longer-term solutions to hospital staffing challenges. It's not rocket science, but it sure needs to be done.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. Julie, any comments or questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, you forgot CareRef, but I'll talk about that in a bit.
Okay.
I just saw something over the weekend that Lauder, who's a big donor to University of Pennsylvania, gave $125 million specifically for Penn to train nurses who will go work in underserved communities. And I mean, hallelujah, more of that would be fantastic. But the question is what these systems can do in the short term to stop the hemorrhaging. Like it's out of control. We have a big problem. So Dave, what are you seeing some of the short-term fixes being?
Well, I think any and all of the above that we talked about earlier. So letting people practice at the top of their license, trying to give them more recognition. I've seen more commercials lauding nurses in the last year and a half or so than ever before. And rightly so. I mean, so many of these people were the ones to run into the fire, and they've confronted patients that wouldn't mask up. You know, and I know that's a concern of yours all the time, Julie. And many are getting tired of it. They're leaving the profession and so on. So I think flexible staffing, paying people more recognition, allowing them to practice at top of license, to find lower cost staff to do some of the more rudimentary functions, all of that as much as possible. But I don't think that in and of itself is going to be enough. It's really going to require the COVID hospitalizations to decrease and for sort of normal admittance patterns to come back before we see real stabilization. And I hadn't heard about the Lauder grant, but that's great news. Longer term, though, I do think we need to do a lot more on interprofessional team development. It's still the doctor is the boss all the time and not a member of the team, the leader of the team. And that's just not always the case. Rosalind Franklin University here in Chicago has multiple medical professional schools, doctors, nurses, technicians, so on and so forth. And they actually all go to class together and they stress the importance of interprofessional learning and team building and practicing together. Tom Mihalovic, the relatively new CEO at the Cleveland Clinic, has said he wants his legacy to be team of teams culture at the clinic. And through their Global Learning and Leadership Institute, they're putting enormous resources behind this. So I think there's a massive culture change that can't happen short term, but has to happen longer term to really turn the medical professionals or the work environments for medical professionals into the nurturing, productive places they should be, so medical professionals can thrive and live their missions with much less burden than they do today.
Yeah, good points. It's not only about money. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about this new strategic plan from the AHA. One of the plan's 5 strategic objectives is address workforce challenges now, near, and far. The workforce objective calls on the AHA to advocate for 5 things. 1, enact a multi-pronged effort to address workforce supply. 2, advance and accelerate new care models for inpatient and ambulatory care settings. 3, introduce and improve resilience capacity. 4, reskill the current workforce. And 5, maintain regulatory reforms gained during the pandemic. Julie, what's your reaction to the overall workforce objectives? Which of the 5 parts are most intriguing? And what market innovations are you seeing that address some of these issues?
Well, first, I think Bridget Duffy and her team have come a long way since we first started talking about safety, relationship with workforce, relationship with consumer and patient experience and outcomes. I mean, this is hitting out AHA's strategic plan. It's pretty incredible. And I don't just have one favorite, but I will share a couple of things. First, just to go back to CareRev, Dave, you know, we're big believers that if you can create regional pools of talent, CareRev focuses on nurses, but you could probably do this across multiple professionals. What nurses want today, and what I think a lot of them want, is control. They want control over their health. They want control over their schedule. They want control over kind of where they show up, how much money they make. And, you know, I talked to a health system last week that's seeing people walk off the job as FTEs and come back the very next day as contracted workforce. So they're finding ways to make what they need to make. So systems compete fiercely at the local level. But if they don't recognize that they need to give some control back to their people and enable them to work across different systems, they're going to lose these people. So, you know, CareRev is doing a lot of work in that space. So I'm also hearing a lot from systems around virtual nursing. And it makes sense when you think about remote patient monitoring and home-based care and, you know, certain types of nursing that can actually have a virtual component. So that's pretty interesting to hear them talking about that. And along kind of the same lines, I think reskilling or upskilling workforce, I'm hearing a lot about systems who are interested in VR-based learning, which I don't know if that's just an obsession or fascination with VR, or if they're just looking for ways to create what sounds like a need for more effective training and just more efficient, fast training, because the turnover is just so quick. So, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of creativity coming from systems around how they think about the training aspect. But there's no doubt that technology is changing the face of human labor. And, you know, what better people to try to reskill than the people who really understand your system, the community you serve? And, you know, you could probably take a lot of people and really move them into positions that would make them much happier as employees. So there's an interesting development, I think, happening there. But the place that I really found interesting in this list was around resilience capacity. And I'm not sure this is, I am sure actually this is not all that they intended. However, I'm hearing a lot from systems today around mental health. And no surprise, every system knows that their people have been through hell and back, a ton of validated PTSD happening among the ranks from environmental service workers, you know, all the way to physicians. What's interesting to me is that hospitals and health systems are trying to find the solution that provides mental health support for their employees. Opposed to every other corporate employer out there who is literally experimenting with just about every solution. Because the corporate employers know, gosh, we just need our people to figure out what's going to work for them. We can't decide what's clinically appropriate for them. But the hospitals and health systems are a little bit more guarded because they're grounded in evidence-based care, and they want to find the mental health platform that will work, which I just think is kind of a funny place for them to be. They're going to have to get comfortable with some experimentation. And, you know, we've partnered with companies like Headspace and ThriveWorks. very, very different models in the space that will work for different types of employees with different schedules and different comfort levels with virtual versus in-person and different needs. So I hope that we see systems actually think about their own resilience, frankly, and how to really help their people.
Thank goodness the days of sucking it up are over, right? Thanks, Julie. Dave, any comments or questions for Julie?
Well, that was really a nice overview of everything that's going on. So well done. I was struck by your comment on more efficient and faster training because of turnover, and also because the state of the art is changing so quickly. Astro Teller, the head of moonshots at Google, says, by the way, isn't that a great job title, head of moonshots, says that for the first time in human history, innovation is occurring at a greater rate than the ability of human beings to adapt to it. And he's a strong proponent of lifelong learning to kind of shorten that gap a little bit. So I guess my question for you, Julie, given that context, is what the AHA is proposing, is it enough, the five pillars, is it enough to address hospital staffing challenges? And if it's not, what more should hospitals be doing? And I think your answer alluded to some of this, but I'd be curious to hear specifically what you say about it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the short-term solutions around getting people just the basic help they need and being willing to accept less than perfect, I think is really important. In the long term, HCA owns a nursing program. You're not going to find many of the systems who can really do that. So I think there's a big question as to what is the role of organizations like AHA or other kind of broader bodies in the industry to really look at how do we market the value of these roles? How do we reposition the sex appeal of them? And how do we think quite systemically around partnerships with education, partnerships with middle schools where kids start to really figure out who they are and what interests them? Those are some things that systems alone won't be able to do.
Interesting things, Julie. I did think, weren't there some stats out that showed an uptick in medical school applications right after the pandemic started? So maybe we'll see that with nursing schools. We'll see. But I will say that anytime I see the words reskill or upskill, I think pink slips and unemployment. Sorry, someone should start a healthcare resume writing service. Now that's an innovative idea worthy of some venture capital. How about it, Julie?
Yeah.
I need a new business model. All right, great discussion as usual. Now let's chat about other big stories this past week. Julie, what other healthcare news grabbed your attention?
Well, I was struck by the passing of Paul Farmer, like so many people in our industry, incredible public health leader and co-founder of Partners in Health. Shocking. I mean, 62 years old. And if not for this man, we would not be where we are today in understanding health equity. And I just am sad for all the work that won't happen because of his earlier than expected death. And gosh, I mean, thank you to someone like him. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, hear, hear. Yeah, definitely sad news. Thank you. Dave, I'll finish where we started and say, what other healthcare news this week kept you up at night?
Actually, I have the same one Julie did. You know, Paul Farmer's sudden and untimely death. He was a founder of Partners in Health and a tireless advocate for global health equity. The book Mountains Beyond Mountains by Tracy Kidder chronicles his remarkable life, particularly his work in Haiti. It's one of my favorites. I actually met Paul about 10 years ago when I was on the board of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. We had trouble, not surprisingly, attracting young people to our events. So imagine how shocked we were when we had to find a new venue to host over 1,500 attendees, most of them young people. Paul was passionate but humble, and the power of his mission just attracted legions. You know, we all walk this earth. Some leave deeper footprints than others. In the field of global health, no one has left deeper footprints than Paul Farmer, dying, as Julie said, way too early at the age of 62. What a loss.
Yeah, that's true. I never met him or interviewed him, but I did interview somebody he worked with. His name was Dr. Galuli, and they were doing some just amazing things with reused medical supplies and equipment. You know, what we put in the alley here, our first line pieces of medical equipment in other countries, and they saw that opportunity and took advantage of it. Thanks, Dave, and thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.